You're listening to SB Nation at the Super Bowl.
We are very pleased to be joined in Miami on Radio Row by the one, the only, the internationally famous Cynthia Freeland. Cynthia, I'm curious, how often do you get like your family members texting you like things from Etsy, like little cute shirts that say like math is fun? Do you get those all the time?
They, you know what, my family is up their game and they just full buy it for me.
Nice.
So I have like a full drawer full of like mathlete, math lover, math. And you're like, got it. Thanks, Mom.
Wasn't your dad like a math person?
Yes. My dad's an engineer too. So
there we go.
What type?
He was an automotive engineer and he used to work on race cars. So engines designed for, I'm going to like butcher this and he's going to listen to it and be mad at me. Like the computer that runs a race car engine, that was my dad.
So was he in Ford versus Ferrari?
We went to see that movie, but he was GM.
Okay.
So I was like, Dad, was Leah Iacocca that good looking? And he's like, nope, not even close. So that's right where.
I went to go see The Social Network when it came out with a computer programmer.
That's more like me.
And then when we walked out, he was just like grumbling about all the inaccuracies he could see in the code on the screen.
Oh, for sure.
So your dad like that? Was he grumbling afterwards? Like, that's not how it really was.
I mean, the fact that he even told us he wanted to do something, because, you know, there's a lot of, like, me, my mom, my sister, we're all, like, loud, horrible women in the best, lovely way. But, you know, the fact he actually was like, I want to do this thing, we're all like, oh, okay. So we just kind of enjoyed it.
So you said the social network programmer was a lot like you. Everybody knows you're analytics queen, analytics god, all of it. How many devices do you use? I'm always curious. Do you have like six iPads or like MBM, whatever? I don't know.
Yeah. So the interesting part is most of the time I carry my laptop with me. Like I only have my laptop in out here in Miami because I can like VPN into my home computer. So my like everything at home, I've got a bunch of screens. I kind of look like I used to be a banker. So I'm like used to that multiple screen like lifestyle, right? So at home I use multiple screens, but on the road I only take my laptop because if I were to try to travel with, you know, the stuff that sits in my closet, it's just way too much computer. It'd be like an extra whole bag.
Do you run it all off your own servers or do you have like a cloud server somewhere?
I do have a cloud.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Well, don't say it. I mean, because be careful.
Actually, you know, they sponsor my stuff and I'm like, can you come on AWS? Like my stuff runs through AWS and I'm like, can I have it for free? No, not
seriously.
Yet.
I want you on the commercial where it's like AWS does this and that and this. I want it to be like Cynthia's.
But then the problem is then like on game day morning, like the Microsoft Surface tablet. So like it kind of conflicting.
So what's the most predictable analytics thing you get all the time? What's the most like the highest win probability and stuff like that? That what you get all the time?
Yeah, I think people want to know win probability probably the most. I get a lot of people who come up to me and ask me who they should play in fantasy for certain things, which is like...
I text you my start sits every week.
Yeah, no. I mean, like, I think I get a lot of questions like that. But I think also, like, the people who understand it, when they see, like, a high number... So this past season, anything that was, like, over 60% of the simulations turned up as a Monte Carlo simulation. So when it was more than 60%, it's like, this sounds like my Anchorman stat, but like, you know, that was up in like 76% correct. So people would be like, which one are your 60%? I get that a lot. Like what's over 60 this week, Sin? You know, and you're like, okay, this.
All right. I have like three questions I'm going to hit you with like real quick.
Let's go.
The first one, because I just want the shortest answer possible.
Yep.
Who's winning the Super Bowl?
Chiefs.
Cool. Second question. I'm sure you factor in when you're doing like predictive analytics for like all the games all year long, home field advantage. Does it factor into the Super Bowl at all?
No.
So there's zero advantage either way?
No.
Travel, like, distance?
If they were to get here the day before, sure, maybe. But they don't. This is like a bye week, and then you have a vacation. Like, the harder part, really, Super Bowl experience does factor into my model, because if you've been there before and you understand all of the requirements and how tired you're going to be, like, these media availability, these questions, like, constant, like, overstimulation.
So this
stuff.
Year it doesn't factor in, the experience, really.
Yeah, I mean, there's only two players. Like, so if you look to see which team, only, I think it's, like, what, Emmanuel Sanders
and
Richard Sherman are the only two on the Niners with experience, where you've got a whole bunch on the Chiefs, so.
Okay, so back to home field advantage.
Yep.
I'm sure it differs from team to team, right?
Sure does.
Worst home field advantage in the league has to be the Chargers?
Currently, sure.
Okay.
So ultimately, look, home field advantage is a tricky thing, because if you move, like, when is it your home? You know what I'm saying? Like, so like can you really consider like, and it's even Dignity Health now. I mean, what was the first one? Like StubHub, like,
yeah,
you know, like all the different names, right? So is that their home? Like, I don't even know. Like, so I think the fact that they don't have a home is a disadvantage more than being at home is an advantage, right? Like that's a very awkward way of saying that, but you know what I mean? Like the lack of kind of home base is a disadvantage, not an advantage.
So for the Chargers then specifically, does being on the road help, I guess, because that factor didn't change when they moved, you know what I mean? Like that's an equivalent sort of situation.
Yeah. When it came to Chargers, I can't remember like the exact number in there, but they had in the Rams too, really, a low factor for kind of difference between, it was travel. Like, obviously, if you're going on the East Coast, there are some differences there. But, you know, or if you're going to London, if you're going to Mexico City, there's some differences there. But it's not, the home was not a positive net for them. Even it took the Cowboys a while in their new stadium for that to have, and it was negative for a while. Right?
It's still that way.
Right. So, you know, it's like, that's not, it takes a while. Like, I just don't know when something becomes your home. That's my question. It's like, when is it home?
See, I cover the Cowboys for SB Nation, and I know that you've worked before on developing offensive line metrics.
Yes.
Can you explain that? Because I have a lot of questions.
Totally. So ultimately, I was told once when I was like very early in like this journey to become like, you know, work in analytics, that there was nothing. Russ Grimm, who is a prolific,
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, prolific. Also, should be Hall of Fame coach too, right? Like, could be both, right?
He had the coolest thing. I was at his Hall of Fame induction, and he talked about he was going to get all the hogs stitched inside of his jacket.
Exactly. Really exactly. Legit. So, for those who don't know, he was a Redskin, and then he was, when I met him, he was the O-line coach for the Tennessee Titans, and he was like, nothing that, and he was fun. Nothing that you can say will ever be useful to me. And whatever. It's like, sure. So I took that as a personal affront, and I tried to quantify waistbender, because that's like, you know, all offensive line coaches are like, waistbenders. I don't want any waistbenders, right? Like negative, unfavorable leverage, like getting pushed back so that your quarterback feels more pressure. I just started with passing downs because that was easier for me to, you know, you had to start somewhere. So what I eventually found was if I measured, so I took computer vision and I basically, it looks like the yellow line, like when you watch on TV or the first down line, I can measure like where a hip, a knee, a butt, big fat men's butts, they don't move very far, so it was easy for me to measure.
Right.
I can measure that in passing situations. Then you contextualize them by down, distance, score, game situation.
That's so awesome.
What kind of quarterback, all of these different things. So I took, you know, I think it was like something like 135,000 passing snaps and tried to create what is an average amount of pushback, because sometimes pushback is strategic, sometimes it's not, but I figured out when it was too close to the quarterback. So I did some work with, you know, like your peripheral vision, you can see 135 degrees, most human beings can. So if you look where their head is looking when they're moving, when the quarterback is surveying, and most quarterbacks are a little over 6 feet tall. So I tried to measure, you know, a 3 foot halo. I expanded it to 5, started with 3 because I thought your arm is 3, but 5 is better proxy. That took a lot of time to get to just that, just so we're clear. And so I measured how many times people got pushed back, and then I correlated that back to find if it was causal. So causal means it's actually related, right? Not just correlated, which we mean could investigate more, to what happens in their first 10 split of their 40. So if you keep your bum down, if you're a big old man and you're a tackle or a guard, you keep your bum down for the first 10 split, you are far less likely to be a waistbender in the league. Most people don't keep their butt down. Taylor Lewan, he kept his butt down a lot. That's one that comes to mind because that was the draft where I really measured it. And I was like, he's going to be good.
Wow.
And he went like really high. Everyone thought he was going to be good. I was like, no, he's actually going to be good.
Yeah, like I can prove
right.
it.
Right, right. Like,
who's the good offensive line that like no one knows about yet?
I think the Niners get a little overlooked. The interior of their line is a little dicey, but Joe Staley being back is a huge deal. Like the difference with pressure, that left tackle position, the replacement, that huge deal. Like third, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo's under pressure, like a third less of snaps on passing downs with Joe Staley than without. So his injury replacement is better. Both of these O-lines are actually pretty, like, very interesting to me. They've had some really good performances. Both are very strong. Both have some weaknesses, though. But I think as far as, you know, they're probably like 5-8 overall in the league.
And I remember like a couple years ago, the Chiefs offensive line took a lot of flack. Like they had issues like 2 or 3 years ago. So they really turned it around.
Patrick Mahomes on the run, you know, being able to like shift where the pocket is or not have a pocket or whatever. Like he's pretty special at doing that. Right. So, and also if you're able to run efficiently on first and second down, like the Niners have, well, your pocket's a little bit more protected because all of your passing options are then available on third and short, right. And a running option. So you keep defenses a little bit more honest. So the shape of the defense is really helpful. You know, if you're not constantly facing third in a million, right? Like or third and long, or you know, if you're not constantly in these like really unfavorable situations, then the shape of the defense will help dictate how the O-line can help. They all work together. Phillip Rivers will know that. He does know that.
You uncover and unturn a lot of stones, as evidenced by the 3 foot, 5 foot halo.
Yeah.
What is the most ambiguous quality? And because I have to imagine, like, measuring the offensive line thing, like, Pat Mahomes has to make that difficult because it's not this sort of stationary thing that it always is.
No, but the lucky thing for me is that to do good data science, in my opinion, you know, what I've been taught is you take a historical sample and then you measure it against like the current sample, mm-hmm. and you find doppelgangers. So things that resemble other things, right? So the doppelganger set, the historical set, gives me a good basis because there weren't a lot of like super mobile quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes. So
right.
It actually shows how like good he is above that, as opposed to like influencing like when, so like there were a lot of pocket passers in my sample, right? Mm-hmm. So that actually helps me. So that I got lucky on that one. Let me be clear. Some things I don't get lucky on. Like, it's way more ambiguous to me. Safety play, the impact of safeties, and you know, not having to draw, like when you have 7 in coverage or when you have this 5 in coverage, like all these different sort of like defensive schemes, like that's a lot harder to quantify in terms of like, all right, because I've been spending a lot of time working on way too much time. I got to figure out safeties better. That's like my sort of like a 2-year project.
What have you learned so far?
That they don't get a lot of shine, but they're super important, and you only really know when they aren't there. Mm. You know what I mean? Like Tyrann Mathieu is a when Tyrann Mathieu's able to be, when you see him, it really, like when he's doing what he's doing well, which is like not biting on play action and staying back in coverage, you know who gets the sack? Chris Jones. So it's really not easy to quantify, like, hey, he's smart enough not to get out of position.
Yeah.
So that's hard. And you've got it. I mean, look, the Chargers safeties are awesome, right? Like, they're different kind of types of safeties. But, like, you know, like when Adrian Phillips and Derwin James were together, that's a way better situation.
So it's funny you're talking about like trying to understand safeties better, because I remember your obsession with Jamal Adams.
Oh, I'm still obsessed with him.
Future Cowboy, Jamal Adams.
So and
probably truth.
And we don't need to go into Jamal Adams.
I did Jets preseason, so.
We don't. But my question to you is, have you started looking at the draft this upcoming year? Who's your favorite player that you're just like, I really want him to end up on the Detroit Lions?
Oof. Well, I don't know if I would like wish that fate on anyone. As a lifelong Lions fan, I like, it's very difficult to like, I mean, look, I will always love them, but I'm a long suffering Lions fan. Look, the Lions are lucky because the things that this draft are really good for, namely wide receiver, like you could throw a dart and hit a great wide receiver in this draft class in the first 2 rounds, right? But Lions are kind of lucky. Like, they don't need it. So what I'd really like from the Lions is some good effing strategy. Give me Chase Young. Mm-hmm. Give me Chase Young. Like, you have the 3rd pick. There's a bunch of people who need quarterbacks. Like, strategically figure it out so that you can maybe, like, trade back 2, get someone, or get Chase Young. One or the other.
Yeah. So what I was trying to ask, who is your Jamal Adams this year? Who's the guy that you look at and you're like, he's going to be an impact player the moment he steps on the field?
Well, it's Chase Young. Like, he's my best player in the draft. Like,
Gina's now very excited.
You are. Perfect. I mean, I'm from Michigan saying that too, so you know, like, this nurse.
Absolutely.
And I went to Northwestern, which doesn't count because it just doesn't. But yeah.
Who, on the subject of Jamal Adams, I guess, Grant Delpit or Isaiah McKenzie? I know it's really early, but where do you fall right now?
Whew. That's a great question. I'm going to have to look at it a little bit. I mean, I want to say I've done more work on Isaiah McKenzie, so I'm a little biased still with it. I'm not, like, I kind of start where people don't start, because so the way that my draft prep works is, like, as these people are, you know, they'll make lists and they'll do all these things. Like, my sweet spot is, like, I want to help teams. So right now I work with teams. So, like, in this time of year, like, once TV switches over to draft, I'll do more TV on draft and talk more about these first round guys. But right now, teams have, like, I consult with teams and I help them create a strategy for free agents. So I've been a little bit more focused on, like, acceptable substitutes, free agent versus draft, to try to navigate, like, so I've been really focused on the wide receiver situation, because, you know, if a team's really smart, they'll go snag a wide receiver. Like, go pay Emmanuel Sanders right now, because it's a known quantity.
Yeah.
Right? But only if you have the other personnel that make that work. So I've been really focused on, just because there are so many, that's kind of where I've spent my time focusing.
That's fascinating.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help but laugh at, like, the Lions fan saying, like, go get a known quantity wide receiver, and then, like, don't go get a wide receiver when you don't have the rest, because of their history of just,
Yeah, no, I lived it.
Yeah.
I lived it, so.
Okay, so one last question. I was telling RJ earlier that I love to ask you questions about, like, have you factored in this? Have you factored in this?
Yep.
So I'm going to pay Gina back because she was just riding high and now she's going to be riding low. Kyle Shanahan, 28-3 factor in at all?
Sure, because when you have 28-3 and you create some, like, look, I specifically remember Devontae Freeman not picking up a blitz. That really changed the cadence of the end of that game. And I asked Marshall Faulk, who was working at the NFL Network at the time, I go, did he not pick that up or was that play call? And Marshall looked at me and he laughed. He goes, I would have made that block. Mm. And I was like, I know you would have, yeah. But like, you know what? So the play call, it's not that you got stung so bad. It's the decision making after that. Like, and you've seen Kyle grow at like just a ton.
But it's still in his history.
Right. Sure. It's just like it's in, you know, your history that you know, in Little League, like, you know what
right.
I mean? Like
right.
we all have our history. Just most of us, you know, it's not really at the Super Bowl with millions and millions of
right.
people watching, you know?
That's interesting. Kind of like, you know, we've all like burned our hands or whatever. I mean, it's just sort
yeah.
of muscle memory at that point.
Totally.
Cynthia, bring the podcast back because this was fascinating.
I know. Let's go.
RJ was a listener. He was
Game
a listener.
Money.
Game Theory of Money podcast.
Every
Listen,
week.
I, first of all, anything you do with Matt Money Smith is like,
it's gold.
You guys are
the pipes,
great together.
And nobody makes me laugh like unexpected. Like Money will just like look at me and say something and then I'll like uncontrol. Like, and it's real too. It's not like a courtesy. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the TV like, nope. It's like I'm on the floor. Like can't breathe.
Bring it back because the O-line thing, the safety thing, it's incredible. Cynthia Freeland.
Thank you.
Queen of analytics, queen of everything. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much for having me.